Unless you want me to believe that Dr. Hua Kaminan committed suicide by dismembering himself and distributing parts of himself all over the top of that platform. The night had been cool, but the sun sprang into the morning sky with incredible swiftness. Almost at once, early as it was in the day, the air began to throb with desert warmth. It was necessary to get a quick start at the site, Magadon Sambisa had told them, since by midday the intense heat would make work very difficult. Valentine was ready for her when she called for him soon after dawn. At her request, he would be accompanied only by some members of his security detachment, not by any of his fellow lords. Tunagorn grumbled about this, as did Mirrigant, but she said, and would not yield on the point, that she preferred that the Pontifex alone come with her today. And after he had seen what she had to show him, he could make his own decisions about sharing the information with the others. She was taking him to the 7th pyramid, or what was left of it, rather, for nothing now remained except the truncated base, a square structure about 20 feet long on each side and 5 or 6 feet high, constructed from the same reddish basalt from which the great arena and some of the other public buildings had been made. East of that stump, the fragments of the pyramid's upper section, smallish broken blocks of the same reddish stone, lay strewn in the most random way across a wide area. It was as though some angry colossus had contemptuously given the western face of the pyramid one furious slap with the back of his ponderous hand and sent it flying into 1,000 pieces. On the side of the stump, away from the debris, Valentine could make out the pointed summit of the still intact 6th pyramid about 500 feet away, rising above a copse of little contorted trees, and beyond it were the other 5, running onward one after another to the edge of the royal palace itself. According to Purivar lore, Magadon Sambisa said, the people of Velalisier held a great festival every 1,000 years and constructed a pyramid to commemorate each one. So far as we've been able to confirm by examining and dating the 6 undamaged ones, that's correct. This one, we know, was the last in the series. If we can believe the legend, and she gave Valentine a meaningful look, it was built to mark the very festival at which the defilement took place, and had just been completed when the city was invaded and destroyed by those who had come here to punish its inhabitants for what they had done. She beckoned to him, leading him around toward the northern side of the shattered pyramid. They walked perhaps 50 feet onward from the stump. Then she halted. The ground had been carefully cut away here. Valentine saw a rectangular opening just large enough for a man to enter, and the beginning of a passageway leading underground and heading back toward the foundations of the pyramid. A star-shaped marker of bright yellow tape was fastened to a good-sized boulder just to the left of the excavation. "That's where you found the head, is it?"
"Not there. Below."
She pointed into the opening. "Will you follow me, Your Majesty?" 6 members of Valentine's security force had gone with Valentine to the pyramid site that morning. The giant warrior woman, Lisamon Hultin, his personal bodyguard, who had accompanied him on all his travels since his juggling days. 2 shaggy, hulking Skandars, a couple of pontifical officials whom he had inherited from his predecessor's staff, and even a metamorph, one Arisim, who had defected to Valentine's forces from the service of the arch-rebel Tharata in the final hours of the War of the Rebellion, and had been with the Pontifex ever since. All 6 stepped forward now as if they meant to go down into the excavation with him, though the Skandars and Lisamon Hultin were plainly too big to fit into the entrance. But Magadon Sambisa shook her head fiercely, and Valentine, smiling, signaled to them all to wait for him above. The archaeologist, lighting a hand torch, entered the opening in the ground. The descent was steep, via a series of precisely chiseled earthen steps that took them downward 9 or 10 feet. Then abruptly, the subterranean passageway leveled off. Here there was a flagstone floor made of broad slabs hewn from some glossy green rock. Magadon Sambisa flashed her light at one and Valentine saw that it bore carved glyphs, runes of some kind, reminiscent of those he had seen in the paving of the grand ceremonial boulevard that ran past the royal palace. "This is our great discovery," she said. "There are shrines, previously unknown and unsuspected, under each of the 7 pyramids. We were working near the 3rd pyramid about 6 months ago, trying to stabilize its foundation, when we stumbled on the 1st one. It had been plundered, very probably in antiquity. But it was an exciting find all the same, and immediately we went looking for similar shrines beneath the other 5 intact pyramids, and found them, also plundered. For the time being, we didn't bother to go digging for the shrine of the 7th pyramid. We assumed that there was no hope of finding anything interesting there, that it must have been looted at the time the pyramid was destroyed. But then Hua Kaminan and I decided that we might as well check it out too, and we put down this trench that we'd been walking through. Within a day or so, we reached this flagstone paving. Come." They went deeper in, entering a carefully constructed tunnel just about wide enough for 4 people to stand in it abreast. Its walls were fashioned of thin slabs of black stone, laid sideways like so many stacked books, leading upward to a vaulted roof of the same stone that tapered into a series of pointed arches. The craftsmanship was very fine, and distinctly archaic in appearance. The air in the tunnel was hot and musty and dry, ancient air, lifeless air. It had a stale, dead taste in Valentine's nostrils. "We call this kind of underground vault a processional hypogeum," Magadon Sambisa explained. "Probably it was used by priests carrying offerings to the shrine of the pyramid." Her torch cast a spreading circlet of pallid light that allowed Valentine to perceive a wall of finely dressed white stone blocking the path just ahead of them. "Is that the foundation of the pyramid we're looking at?" he asked. "No. What we see here is the wall of the shrine, nestling against the pyramid's base. The pyramid itself is on the far side of it. The other shrines were located right up against their pyramids in the same way. The difference is that all the others had been smashed open. This one has apparently never been breached." Valentine whistled softly. "And what do you think is inside it?" "We don't have any idea. We were putting off opening it, waiting for Lord Hissun to return from his processional in Zimroel, so that you and he could be on hand when we broke through the wall. But then, the murder." "Yes," Valentine said soberly. And after a moment, "How strange that the destroyers of the city demolished the 7th pyramid so thoroughly, but left the shrine beneath it intact. You'd think they would have made a clean sweep of the place." "Perhaps there was something walled up in the shrine that they didn't want to go near, eh? It's a thought, anyway. We may never know the truth, even after we open it. If we open it." "If? There may be problems about that, Majesty. Political problems, I mean. We need to discuss them, but this isn't the moment for that." Valentine nodded. He indicated a row of small indented apertures, perhaps 9 inches deep and about 1 foot high, that had been chiseled in the wall some 18 inches above ground level. "Were those for putting offerings in?" "Exactly." Magadon Sambisa flashed the torch across the row from right to left. "We found microscopic traces of dried flowers in several of them, and potsherds and flowered pebbles in others. You can still see them there, actually, and some animal remains." She hesitated. "And then, in the alcove on the far left..." The torch came to rest on a star of yellow tape, attached to the shallow alcove's back wall. Valentine gasped in shock. "There?" "Hua Kaminan's head, yes. Placed very neatly in the center of the alcove, facing outward. An offering of some sort, I suppose."
"To whom? To what?"
The archaeologist shrugged and shook her head. Then abruptly she said, "We should go back up now, Your Majesty. The air down here isn't good to spend a lot of time in. I simply wanted you to see where the shrine was situated, and where we found the missing part of Dr. Hua Kaminan's body. Later in the day, with Nashamonte and Tunagorn and the rest now joining him, Magadon Sambisa showed Valentine the site of the expedition's other significant discovery, the bizarre cemetery, previously unsuspected, where the ancient inhabitants of Velalisier had buried their dead. Or more precisely, had buried certain fragments of their dead. There doesn't appear to be a complete body anywhere in the whole graveyard. In every interment we've opened, what we've found is merely tiny bits. A finger here, an ear there, a lip, a toe, or some internal organ even. Each item carefully embalmed and placed in a beautiful stone casket and buried beneath one of these gravestones. The part for the whole, a kind of metaphorical burial. Valentine stared in wonder and astonishment. The 20,000-year-old Metamorph Cemetery was one of the strangest sights he had seen in all his years of exploring the myriad wondrous strangenesses that Majapur had to offer. It covered an area hardly more than 100 feet long and 60 feet wide, off in a lonely zone of dunes and weeds a short way beyond the end of one of the north-south flagstone boulevards. In that small plot of land, there might have been 10,000 graves, all jammed together. A small stela of brown sandstone, a hand's width broad and about 15 inches high, jutted upward from each of the grave plots, and each of them crowded in upon the ones adjacent to it in a higgledy-piggledy fashion, so that the cemetery was a dense agglomeration of slender, close-set gravestones, tilting this way and that in a manner that utterly befuddled the eye. At one time, every stone must have lovingly been set in a vertical position above the casket containing the bit of the departed that had been chosen for interment here. But the Metamorphs of Velalisier had evidently gone on jamming more and more burials into this little funereal zone over the course of centuries, until each grave overlapped the next in the most chaotic manner. Dozens of them were packed into every square yard of terrain. As the headstones continued to be crammed one against another, without heed for the damage that each new burial was doing to the tombs already in place, the older ones were pushed out of perpendicular by their new neighbors. The slender stones all leaned precariously one way and another, looking the way a forest might after some monstrous storm had passed through, or after the ground beneath it had been bent and buckled by the force of some terrible earthquake. They all stood at crazy angles now, no two slanting in the same direction. On each of these narrow headstones, a single elegant glyph was carved precisely one-third of the way from the top, an intricately patterned whorl of the sort found in other zones of the city. No symbol seemed like any other one. Did they represent the names of the deceased? Prayers to some long-forgotten god? We hadn't any idea that this was here, Magadon Sambisa said. This is the first burial site that's ever been discovered in Velalisier.
I'll testify to that, Nashamonte said with a great jovial wink. I did a little digging here myself, you know, long ago. Tomb hunting, looking for buried treasure that I might be able to sell somewhere, during the time I was forced from my land in the reign of the false Lord Valentine and living like a bandit in this desert. But not a single grave did any of us come upon then, not one.
Nor did we detect any, though we tried, said Magadon Sambisa. When we found this place, it was only by sheer luck. It was hidden deep under the dunes, 10, 12, 20 feet below the surface of the sand. No one suspected it was here. But one day last winter, a terrific whirlwind swept across the valley and hovered right up over this part of the city for 30 minutes. And by the time it was done whirling, the whole dune had been picked up and tossed elsewhere, and this amazing collection of gravestones lay exposed. Here, look. She knelt and brushed a thin coating of sand away from the base of a gravestone just in front of her. In moments, the upper lid of a small box made of polished gray stone came into view. She pried it free and set it to one side. Tunagorn made a sound of disgust. Valentine, peering down, saw a thing like a curling scrap of dark leather lying within the box. "They're all like this," said Magadon Sambisa. "Symbolic burial, taking up a minimum of space. An efficient system, considering what a huge population Villalicier must have had in its prime. One tiny bit of the dead person's body buried here, preserved so artfully that it's still in pretty good condition even after all these thousands of years. The rest of it exposed on the hills outside town, for all we know, to be consumed by natural processes of decay. A Purivar corpse would decay very swiftly, would find no traces after all this time. How does that compare with present-day shapeshifter burial practices?" Mirigant asked. Magadon Sambisa looked at him oddly. "We know next to nothing about present-day Purivar burial practices. They're a pretty secretive race, you know. They never chosen to tell us anything about such things, and evidently we've been too polite to ask, because there's hardly a thing on record about it. Hardly a thing." "You have shapeshifter scientists on your own staff," Tunagorn said. "Surely it wouldn't be impolite to consult your own associates about something like that? What's the point of training shapeshifters to be archaeologists if you're going to be too sensitive of their feelings to make any use of their knowledge of their own people's ways?" "As a matter of fact," said Magadon Sambisa, "I did discuss this find with Dr. Hua Kaminan not long after it was uncovered. The layout of the place, the density of the burial, seemed pretty startling to him. But he didn't seem at all surprised by the concept of burial of body parts instead of entire bodies. He gave me to understand what had been done here wasn't all that different in some aspects from things the Purivars still do today." There wasn't time just then for him to go into further details, though, and we both let the subject slip. And now... Once more she displayed that look of stunned helplessness, of futility and confusion in the face of violent death, that came over her whenever the topic of the murder of Hua Kaminan arose. "Not all that different in some aspects from things the Purivars still do today," Valentine repeated silently. He considered the way Hua Kaminan's body had been cut apart, the sundered pieces left in various places atop the sacrificial platform, the head carried down into the tunnel beneath the seventh pyramid and carefully laid to rest in one of the alcoves of the underground shrine. There was something implacably alien about that grisly act of dismemberment that brought Valentine once again to the conclusion, mystifying and distasteful but seemingly inescapable, that had been facing him since his arrival here. The murderer of the metamorph archaeologist must have been a metamorph himself. As Nashamonte had suggested earlier, there seemed to be a ritual aspect to the butchery that had all the hallmarks of metamorph work. But still it made no sense. Valentine had difficulty believing that the old man could have been killed by one of his own people. "What was Hua Kaminan like?" he asked Magadon Sambisa. "I never met him, you know. Was he contentious? Cantankerous?" "Not in the slightest. A sweet, gentle person. A brilliant scholar. There was no one, Purivar or human, who didn't love and admire him."
"Well, there must have been one person, at least," said Nashamonte, wryly.
Perhaps Nashamonte's theory was worth exploring. Valentine said, "Could there have been some sort of bitter professional disagreement, a dispute over the credit for a discovery, a battle over some piece of theory?" Magadon Sambisa stared at the pontifex as though he had gone out of his mind. "Do you think we kill each other over such things, Your Majesty?"
"It was a foolish suggestion," Valentine said with a smile.
"Well then," he went on, "suppose Hua Kaminan had come into possession of some valuable artifact in the course of his work here, some priceless treasure that would fetch a huge sum in the antiquities market. Might that not have been sufficient cause for murdering him?"
Again the incredulous stare. "The artifacts we find here, Majesty, are of the nature of simple sandstone statuettes and bricks bearing inscriptions, not golden tiaras and emeralds the size of Gehorna eggs. Everything worth looting was looted a long, long time ago, and we would no more dream of trying to make a private sale of the little things that we find here than we would... than we would of murdering each other. Our finds are divided equally between the University Museum in Arcalon and the Purivar Treasury at Illyrivoin. In any case, no, it's not even worth discussing. The idea is completely absurd. Instantly, her cheeks turned flame red. Forgive me, Majesty, I meant no disrespect. Valentine brushed the apology aside. What I'm doing, you see, is groping for some plausible explanation of the crime. A place to begin our investigation, at least. I'll give you one, Valentine, Tunagorn said suddenly. His normally open and genial face was tightly drawn in a splenetic scowl that brought his heavy eyebrows together into a single dark line. The basic thing that we need to keep in mind all the time is that there's a curse on this place. You know that, Valentine. A curse. The shapeshifters themselves put the dark word on the city. The divine knows how many thousands of years ago, when they smashed it up to punish those who had chopped up those two sea dragons. They intended the place to be shunned forever. Only ghosts have lived here ever since. By sending these archaeologists of yours in here, Valentine, you're disturbing those ghosts, making them angry. And so they're striking back. Killing old Hua Kaminan was the first step. There'll be more, mark my words. And you think, do you, that ghosts are capable of cutting someone into five or six pieces and scattering the parts far and wide? Tunagorn was not amused. I don't know what sorts of things ghosts may or may not be capable of doing, he said staunchly. I'm just telling you what has crossed my mind. Thank you, my good old friend, said Valentine pleasantly. We'll give the thought the examination it deserves. And to Magadon Sambisa he said, I must tell you what has crossed my mind, based on what you've shown me today, here and at the Pyramid Shrine, which is that the killing of Hua Kaminan strikes me as a ritual murder, and the ritual involved is some kind of Purivar ritual. I don't say that that's what it is, I just say that it certainly looks that way. And if it does, then we have our starting point. It's time now to move to the next phase of our work, I think. Please have the kindness to call your entire group of Purivar archaeologists together this afternoon. I want to speak with them. One by one or all together? All of them together at first, said Valentine. But Magadon Sambisa's people were scattered all over the huge archaeological zone, each one involved with some special project, and she begged Valentine not to have them called in until the working day was over. It would take so long to reach them all, she said, that the worst of the heat would have descended by the time they began their return to camp, and they would be compelled to trek across the ruins in the full blaze of noon instead of settling in some dark cavern to await the cooler hours that lay ahead. Meet with them at sundown, she implored him. Let them finish their day's tasks. That seemed only reasonable. He said that he would. But Valentine himself was unable to sit patiently by until dusk. The murder had jarred him deeply. It was one more symptom of the strange new darkness that had come over the world in his lifetime. Huge as it was, Majapur had long been a peaceful place, where there was comfort and plenty for all, and crime of any sort was an extraordinary rarity. But even so, just in this present generation there had been the assassination of the coronal lord Voriax, and then the diabolically contrived usurpation that had pushed Voriax's successor, Valentine, from his throne for a time. The Metamorphs, everyone knew now, had been behind both of those dire acts. And after Valentine's recovery of the throne had come the War of the Rebellion, organized by the embittered Metamorph Farata, bringing with it plagues, famines, riots, a worldwide panic, great destruction everywhere. Valentine had ended that uprising, finally, by reaching out himself to take Farata's life, a deed that the gentle Valentine had regarded with horror, but which he had carried out all the same, because it had to be done. Now, in this new era of worldwide peace and harmony that Valentine, reigning as pontifex, had inaugurated, an admirable and beloved old metamorph scholar had been murdered in the most brutal way. murdered here in the holy city of the Metamorphs themselves, while he was in the midst of archaeological work that Valentine had instituted as one way of demonstrating the newfound respect of the human people of Majapur for the aboriginal people they had displaced. And there was every indication, at least at this point, that the murderer was himself a metamorph. But that seemed insane. Perhaps Tunagorn was right, that all of this was merely the working out of some ancient curse. That was a hard thing for Valentine to swallow. He had little belief in such things as curses. And yet... Restlessly he stalked the ruined city all through the worst heat of the day, heedless of the discomfort, pulling his hapless companions along. The sun's great golden-green eye stared unrelentingly down. Heat shimmers danced in the air. The leathery-leaved little shrubs that grew all over the ruins seemed to fold in upon themselves to hide from those torrid blasts of light. Even the innumerable skittering lizards that infested these rocks grew reticent as the temperature climbed.
"I would almost think we had been transported to Suvrael," said Tunagorn, panting in the heat as he dutifully labored along beside the pontifex. "This is the climate of the miserable Southland, not of our pleasant Alhanroel."
Nashamonte gave him a sardonic, squinting smirk.
"Just one more example of the malevolence of the shapeshifters, my lord Tunagorn. In the days when the city was alive, there were green forests all about this place, and the air was cool and mild. But then the river was turned aside, and the forests died, and nothing was left here but the bare rock that you see, which soaks up the heat of noon and holds it like a sponge. Ask the archaeologist, lady, if you don't believe me. This province was deliberately turned into a desert for the sake of punishing those who had committed great sins in it."
"All the more reason for us to be somewhere else," Tunagorn muttered. "But no, no, this is our place, here with Valentine, now and ever."
Valentine scarcely paid attention to what they were saying. He wandered aimlessly onward, down one weedy byway and another, past fallen columns and shattered facades, past the empty shells of what might once have been shops and taverns, past the ghostly outlines marking the foundation of vanished dwellings that must once have been palatial in their grandeur. Nothing was labeled, and Magadon Sambisa was not with him now to bend his ear with endless disquisitions about the former identities of these places. They were bits and pieces of lost Velalisier. That was all he knew. Skeletonic remnants of this ancient metropolis. It was easy enough, even for him, to imagine this place as the lair of ancient phantoms. A glassy glimmer of light shining out of some tumbled mass of broken columns. Odd, scratchy sounds that might have been those of creatures crawling about where no creatures could be seen. The occasional hiss and slither of shifting sand. Sand that moved, so it would appear, of its own volition. "Every time I visit these ruins," he said to Mirigant, who was walking closest to him now, "I'm astounded by the antiquity of it all. The weight of history that presses down on it."
"History that no one remembers," Mirigant said.
"But its weight remains."
"Well, not our history, though."
Valentine shot his cousin a scornful look. "So you may believe. But it's Majapur's history, and what is that if not ours?" Mirigan shrugged and made no answer. Was there any meaning, Valentine wondered, in what he had just said? Or was the heat addling his brain? He pondered it. Into his mind there came, with a force almost like that of an explosion, a vision of the totality of vast Majapur, its great continents and overwhelming rivers and immense shining seas, its dense, moist jungles and great deserts, its forests of towering trees and mountains rich with strange and wonderful creatures, its multitude of sprawling cities with their populations of many millions. His soul was flooded with an overload of sensation. The perfume of a thousand kinds of flowers, the aromas of a thousand spices, the savory tang of a thousand wondrous meats, the bouquet of a thousand wines. It was a world of infinite richness and variety, this Marchapur of his. And by a fluke of descent and his brother's bad luck, he had come first to be coronal and now pontifex of that world. 20 billion people hailed him as their emperor. His face was on the coinage. The world resounded with his praises. His name would be inscribed forever on the roster of monarchs in the House of Records, an imperishable part of the history of this world. But once there had been a time when there were no pontifexes and coronals here, when such wondrous cities as Nemoya and Elesor and the 50 great urban centers of Castle Mount did not exist. And in that time before human settlement had begun on Marjapur, this city of Velalisiere already was. What right did he have to appropriate this city, already thousands of years dead and desolate when the first colonists arrived from space, into the flow of human history? In truth, there was a discontinuity so deep between their Marjapur and our Marjapur, he thought, that it might never be bridged. In any case, he could not rid himself of the feeling that this place's great legion of ghosts, in whom he did not even believe, were lurking all around him, and that their fury was still unappeased. Somehow he would have to deal with that fury, which had broken out now, so it seemed, in the form of a terrible act that had cost the life of a studious and inoffensive old man. The logic that infused every aspect of Valentine's soul balked at any comprehension of such a thing. But his own fate, he knew, and perhaps the fate of the world, might depend on his finding a solution to the mystery that had exploded here.
"You will pardon me, good Majesty," said Tunaguan, breaking in on Valentine's broodings just as a new maze of ruined streets opened out before them. "But if I take another step in this heat, I will fall down gibbering like a madman. My very brain is melting."
"Why then, Tunaguan, you should certainly seek refuge quickly and cool it off. You can ill afford to damage what's left of it, can you, old friend?" Valentine pointed in the direction of the camp.
"Go back, go.
But I will continue, I think." He was not sure why, but something drove him grimly forward across this immense bedraggled sprawl of sand-choked, sun-blasted ruins, seeking he knew not what. One by one his other companions dropped away from him, with this apology or that, until only the indefatigable Lisamon Halton remained. The giantess was ever faithful. She had protected him from the dangers of the Macedone forest in the days before his restoration to the coronal's throne. She had been his guardian in the belly of the sea dragon that had swallowed them both in the sea off Piliplock, that time when they were shipwrecked sailing from Zimroel to Alhanroel. And she had cut him free and carried him up to safety. She would not leave him now. Indeed, she seemed willing to walk on and on with him through the day and the night and the day that followed as well, if that was what he required of her. But eventually, even Valentine had had enough. The sun had long since moved beyond its noon height. Sharp-edged pools of shadow, rose and purple and deepest obsidian, were beginning to reach out all about him. He was feeling a little light-headed now, his head swimming a little and his vision wavering from the prolonged strain of coping with the unyielding glare of that blazing sun. And each street of tumbled-down buildings had come to look exactly like its predecessor. It was time to go back. Whatever penance he had been imposing on himself by such an exhausting journey through this dominion of death and destruction must surely have been fulfilled by now. He leaned on Lisamon Halton's arm now and again as they made their way towards the tents of the encampment. Magadon Sambisa had assembled her 8 metamorph archaeologists. Valentine, having bathed and rested and had a little to eat, met with them just after sundown in his own tent, accompanied only by the little Vroon, Autophon Deliamber. He wanted to form his opinions of the metamorphs undistracted by the presence of Nashamonte and the rest. But Deliamber had certain Vroonish wizardly skills that Valentine prized highly, and the small, many-tentacled being might well be able to perceive things with those huge and keen golden eyes of his that would elude Valentine's own human vision. The shapeshifters sat in a semicircle, with Valentine facing them, and the tiny, wizened old Vroon at his left hand. The pontifex ran his glance down the group, from the site boss Castisic at one end to the paleographer Vo Sumifon on the other. They looked back at him calmly, almost indifferently, these 7 rubbery-faced, slope-eyed purivars, as he told them of the things he had seen this day, the shattered pyramid and the shrine beneath it, and the alcove where Huakaminon's severed head had been so carefully placed by his murderer. "There was, wouldn't you say, a certain formal aspect to the murder?" Valentine said. "The cutting of the body into pieces, the carrying of the head down to the shrine, the placement in the alcove of offerings." His gaze fastened on Theorinen, the ceramics expert, a lithe, diminutive metamorph woman with lovely jade-green skin. "What's your reading on that?" he asked her. Her expression was wholly impassive. "As a ceramicist, I have no opinion at all."
"I don't want your opinion as a ceramicist, just as a member of the expedition, a colleague of Dr. Huakaminon's. Does it seem to you that putting the head there meant that some kind of offering was being made?"
"It is only conjecture that those alcoves were places of offering," said Theurinen primly. "I am not in a position to speculate."
Nor would she.
Nor would any of them. Not Castisic, not Vo Sumifon, not the stratigrapher Pamekuk, nor Hikrad, the custodian of material artifacts, nor Drusmul, the architectural specialist, nor Klelin, the authority on Purivar paleotechnology, nor Vital Twu, the specialist in metallurgy. Politely, mildly, firmly, unshakably, they brushed aside Valentine's hypotheses about ritual murder. Was the gruesome dismemberment of Dr. Huakaminon a hearkening back to the funereal practices of ancient Velalesquier? Was the placing of his head in that alcove likely to have been any kind of propitiation of some supernatural being? Was there anything in Purivar tradition that might countenance killing someone in that particular fashion? They could not say. They would not say. Nor, when he inquired as to whether their late colleague might have had an enemy here at the site, did they provide him with any information. And they merely gave him the Purivar equivalent of a shrug when he wondered out loud whether there could have been some struggle over the discovery of a valuable artifact that might have led to Huakaminon's murder, or even a quarrel of a more abstract kind, a fierce disagreement over the findings or goals of the expedition. Nobody showed any sign of outrage at his implication that one of them might have killed old Huakaminon over such a matter. They behaved as though the whole notion of doing such a thing were beyond their comprehension, a concept too alien even to consider. During the course of the interview, Valentine took the opportunity to aim at least one direct question at each of them. But the result was always the same. They were unhelpful without seeming particularly evasive. They were unforthcoming without appearing unusually sly or secretive. There was nothing overtly suspicious about their refusal to cooperate. They seemed to be precisely what they claimed to be: scientists, studious scholars devoted to uncovering the buried mysteries of their race's remote past, who knew nothing at all about the mystery that had erupted right here in their midst. He did not feel himself to be in the presence of murderers here. And yet, they were shapeshifters. He was the pontifex, the emperor of the race that had conquered them, the successor across 8,000 years of the half-legendary soldier king Lord Stiamat, who had deprived them of their independence for all time. Mild and scholarly though they might be, these 8 Purivars before him surely could not help but feel anger, on some level of their souls, toward their human masters. They had no reason to cooperate with him. They would not see themselves under any obligation to tell him the truth. And, was this only his innate and inescapable racial prejudices speaking, Valentine wondered? Intuition told him to take nothing at face value among these people. Could he really trust the impression of apparent innocence that they gave? Was it possible ever for a human to read the things that lay hidden beneath a metamorph's cool, impenetrable features? "What do you think?" he asked Deliamber, when the 7 shapeshifters had gone. "Murderers or not?"
"Probably not,"
the Vroom replied.
"Not these. Too soft. Too citified. But they were holding something back. I'm certain of that."
"You felt it too, then?"
"Beyond any doubt. What I sensed, Your Majesty. Do you know what the rune word Sirtir means?"
"Not really."
"It isn't easy to translate, but it has to do with questioning someone who doesn't intend to tell you any lies, but isn't necessarily going to tell you the truth, either, unless you know exactly how to call it forth. You pick up a powerful perception that there's an important layer of meaning hidden somewhere beneath the surface of what you're being told, but that you won't be allowed to elicit that hidden meaning unless you ask precisely the right question to unlock it, which means, essentially, that you already have to know the information that you're looking for before you can ask the question that would reveal it. It's a very frustrating sensation, Sitir. Almost painful, in fact. It is like hitting one's beak against a stone wall. I felt myself placed in a state of Sirtir just now. Evidently so did you, Your Majesty."
"Evidently I did," said Valentine. There was one more visit to make, though. It had been a long day, and a terrible weariness was coming over Valentine now. But he felt some inner need to cover all the basic territory in a single sweep. And so, once darkness had fallen, he asked Magadon Sambisa to conduct him to the village of the Metamorph laborers. She was unhappy about that. "We don't usually like to intrude on them after they've finished their day's work and gone back there, Your Majesty. You don't usually have murders here, either. Or visits from the Pontifex. I'd rather speak with them tonight than disrupt tomorrow's digging, if you don't mind." Deliamber accompanied him once again. At her own insistence, so did Lysimon Haltin. Tunagorn was too tired to go. His hike through the ruins at midday had done him in. And Mirrigant was feeling feverish from a touch of sunstroke. But formidable old Duke Nashamonte readily agreed to ride with the Pontifex, despite his great age. The final member of the party was Arisim, the metamorph member of Valentine's security staff, whom Valentine brought with him not so much for protection — Lysimon Haltin would look after that — as for the Sirtir problem. Arisim, turncoat though he once had been, seemed to Valentine to be as trustworthy as any Purivar was likely to be. He had risked his own life to betray his master Faratah to Valentine in the time of the rebellion, when he had felt that Faratah had gone beyond all decency by threatening to slay the Metamorph Queen. He could be helpful now, perhaps, detecting things that eluded even Deliamber's powerful perceptions. The laborer's village was a gaggle of meager wickerwork huts outside the central sector of the dig. In its flimsy, makeshift look, it reminded Valentine of Illyravoin, the shapeshifter capital in the jungle of Zimroel, which he had visited so many years before. But this place was even sadder and more disheartening than Illyravoin. There, at least, the metamorphs had had an abundance of tall, straight saplings and jungle vines with which to build their ramshackle huts.
whereas the only construction materials available to them here were the gnarled and twisted desert shrubs that dotted the Velalissière plain. And so their huts were miserable little things, dismally warped and contorted. They had had advance word somehow that the Pontifex was coming. Valentine found them arrayed in groups of 8 or 10 in front of their shacks, clearly waiting for his arrival. They were a pitiful, starved-looking bunch, gaunt and shabby and ragged, very different from the urbane and cultivated metamorphs of Magadon Sambisa's archaeological team. Valentine wondered where they found the strength to do the digging that was required of them in this inhospitable climate. As the Pontifex came into view, they shuffled forward to meet him, quickly surrounding him and the rest of his party in a way that caused Lisamon Haltin to hiss sharply and put her hand to the hilt of her vibration sword. But they did not appear to mean any harm. They clustered excitedly around him, and to his amazement, offered homage in the most obsequious way, jostling among themselves for a chance to kiss the hem of his tunic, kneeling in the sand before him, even prostrating themselves. "No!" Valentine cried, dismayed. "This isn't necessary. It isn't right." Already Magadon Sambisa was ordering them brusquely to get back, and Lisamon Haltin and Nashimonte were shoving the ones closest to Valentine away from him. The giantess was doing it calmly, unhurriedly, efficiently, but Nashimonte was prodding them more truculently, with real detestation apparent in his fiery eyes. Others came pressing forward as fast as the first wave retreated, though, pushing in upon him in frantic determination. So eager were these weary, toil-worn people to show their obeisance to the Pontifex, in fact, that he could not help regarding their enthusiasm as blatantly false, an ostentatious overdoing of whatever might have been appropriate. How likely was it, he wondered, that any group of Purovars, however lowly and simple, would feel great, unalloyed joy at the sight of the Pontifex of Majapur, or would, of their own accord, stage such a spontaneous demonstration of delight. Some, men and women both, were even allowing themselves to mimic the forms of the visitors by way of compliment, so that half a dozen blurry, distorted Valentines stood before him, and a couple of Nashimontes, and a grotesque, half-sized imitation of Lisamon Haltin. Valentine had experienced that peculiar kind of honor before, in his Illyrivoyne visit, and he had found it disturbing and even chilling then. It distressed him again now. Let them shift shapes if they wished. They had that capacity to use as they pleased. But there was something almost sinister about this appropriation of the visages of their visitors. And the jostling began to grow even wilder and more frenzied. Despite himself, Valentine started to feel some alarm. There were more than 100 villagers, and the visitors numbered only a handful. There could be real trouble if things got out of control. Then, in the midst of the hubbub, a powerful voice called out, "Back! Back!" And at once the whole ragged band of shapeshifters shrank away from Valentine as though they had been struck by whips. There was a sudden stillness and silence. Out of the now motionless throng, there stepped a tall metamorph of unusually muscular and powerful build. He made a deep gesticulation and announced, in a dark, rumbling tone quite unlike that of any metamorph voice Valentine had ever heard before, "I am Vatimarak, the foreman of these workers. I beg you to feel welcome here among us, Pontifex. We are your servants." But there was nothing servile about him. He was plainly a man of presence and authority. Briskly, he apologized for the uncouth behavior of his people, explaining that they were simple peasants astounded by the presence of a power of the realm among them, and this was merely their way of showing respect. "I know this man," murmured Arisim into Valentine's left ear. But there was no opportunity just then to find out more, for Vatimarak, turning away, made a signal with one upraised hand, and instantly the scene became one of confusion and noise once again. The villagers went running off in a dozen different directions, some returning almost at once with platters of sausages and bowls of wine for their guests, others hauling lopsided tables and benches from the huts. Platoons of them came crowding in once more on Valentine and his companions, this time urging them to sample the delicacies they had to offer. "They're giving us their own dinners," Magadon Sambisa protested. And she ordered Vatimarak to call off the feast. But the foreman replied smoothly that it would offend the villagers to refuse their hospitality. And in the end there was no help for it. They must sit down at table and partake of all that the villagers brought for them. "If you will, Majesty," said Nashamonte as Valentine reached for a bowl of wine. The Duke took it from him and sipped it first, and only after a moment did he return it. He insisted also on tasting Valentine's sausages for him, and the scraps of boiled vegetables that went with them. It had not occurred to Valentine that the villagers would try to poison him, but he allowed old Nashamonte to enact his charming little rite of medieval chivalry without objection. He was too fond of the old man to want to spoil his gesture. Vatimarak said, when the feasting had gone on for some time, "You are here, Your Majesty, about the death of Dr. Huacaminon, I assume." The foreman's bluntness was startling. "Could it not be," Valentine said good-humoredly, "that I just wanted to observe the progress being made at the excavations?" Vatimarak would have none of that. "I will do whatever you may require of me in your search for the murderer," he said, rapping the table sharply to underscore his words. For an instant, the outlines of his broad, heavy-jowled face rippled and wavered, as if he were on the verge of undergoing an involuntary metamorphosis. Among the Purivar, Valentine knew, that was a sign of being swept by some powerful emotion. "I had the greatest respect for Dr. Huacaminon. It was a privilege to work beside him. I often dug for him myself, when I felt the site was too delicate to entrust to less skillful hands. He thought that that was improper at first, that the foreman should dig, but I said, 'No, no, Dr. Huacaminon, I beg you to allow me this glory.' And he understood, and permitted me. How may I help you to find the perpetrator of this dreadful crime?" He seemed so solemn and straightforward and open that Valentine could not help but find himself immediately on guard. Vatimarak's strong, booming voice and overly formal choice of phrase had an overtly theatrical quality. His elaborate sincerity seemed much like the extreme effusiveness of the villagers' demonstration, all that kneeling and kissing of his hem. Unconvincing because it was so excessive. "You are too suspicious of these people," he told himself. "This man is simply speaking as he thinks a pontifex should be spoken to. And in any case, I think he can be useful." He said, "How much do you know of how the murder was committed?" But Timurak responded without hesitation, as if he had been holding a well-rehearsed reply in readiness. "I know that it happened late at night, the week before this, somewhere between the hour of the Gehorna and the hour of the Jackal. A person or persons lured Dr. Huacaminon from his tent and led him to the tables of the gods, where he was killed and cut into pieces. We found the various segments of his body the next morning atop the western platform, all but his head, which we discovered later that day in one of the alcoves along the base of the Shrine of the Downfall." Pretty much the standard account, Valentine thought. Except for one small detail. "The Shrine of the Downfall? I haven't heard that term before." "The Shrine of the Seventh Pyramid is what I mean," said Vatimarak. "The unopened shrine that Dr. Magadon Sambisa found. The name that I used is what we call it among ourselves. You notice that I do not say she discovered it. We have always known that it was there, adjacent to the broken pyramid. But no one ever asked us, and so we never spoke of it." Valentine glanced across at Deliamber, who nodded ever so minutely. "Sirtir again, yes." Something was not quite right, though. Valentine said, "Dr. Magadon Sambisa told me that she and Dr. Huacaminon came upon the seventh shrine jointly, I think. She indicated that he was just as surprised at finding it there as she had been. Are you claiming that you knew of its existence, but he didn't?" "There is no Purivar who does not know of the existence of the Shrine of the Downfall," said Vatimarak stolidly. "It was sealed at the time of the defilement and contains, we believe, evidence of the defilement itself. If Dr. Magadon Sambisa formed the impression that Dr. Hua Kaminan was unaware that it was there, that was an incorrect impression.
Once again, the edges of the foreman's face flickered and wavered. He looked worriedly toward Magadon Sambisa and said,
I mean no offense in contradicting you, Dr. Magadon Sambisa.
None taken, she said a little stiffly. But if Hua Kaminan knew of the shrine before the day we found it, he never said a thing about it to me.
Perhaps he had hoped it would not be found, Vatimirak replied.
This brought a show of barely concealed consternation from Magadon Sambisa, and Valentine himself sensed that there was something here that needed to be followed up. But they were drifting away from the main issue.
What I need you to do, said Valentine to the foreman, is to determine the whereabouts of every single one of your people during the hours when the murder was committed.
He saw Vatimirak's reaction beginning to take form, and added quickly, I'm not suggesting that we believe at this point that anyone from the village killed Dr. Hua Kaminan. No one at all is under suspicion at this point. But we do need to account for everybody who was present in or around the excavation zone that night.
I will do what I can to find out.
Your help will be invaluable, I know, Valentine said.
You will also want to enlist the aid of Arkivanovod, Vatimirak said. He is not among us tonight. He has gone off on a spiritual retreat into the farthest zone of the city to pray for the purification of the soul of the killer of Dr. Hua Kaminan, whoever that may be. I will send him to you when he returns.
Another little surprise. Akivanovad was a Puravar holy man, something midway between a priest and a wizard. They were relatively uncommon in modern metamorph life. And it was remarkable that there should be one in residence at this scruffy, out-of-the-way village. Unless, of course, the high religious leaders of the Puravars had decided that it was best to install one at Velalessier for the duration of the dig, to ensure that everything was done with the proper respect for the holy places. It was odd that Magadon Sambisa hadn't mentioned to him that a Kivanovad was present here.
Yes, said Valentine a little uneasily.
Yes, by all means.
As they rode away from the laborer's village, Nashamonte said, Well, Valentine, I'm pained to confess that I find myself once again forced to question your judgment.
You do suffer much pain on my behalf, said Valentine with a twinkling smile.
Tell me, Nashamonte, where have I gone amiss this time?
You enlisted that man Vatimirak as your ally in the investigation. You treated him, in fact, as though he were a trusted constable of police.
He seems steady enough to me, and the villagers are terrified of him. What harm is there in asking him to question them for us? If we interrogate them ourselves, they'll just shut up like clams, or at best they'll tell us all kinds of fantastic stories, whereas Vatimirak might just be able to bully the truth out of them.
Some useful fraction of it, anyway.
Not if he is the murderer himself, said Nashamonte.
Ah, is that it? You've solved the crime, my friend. Vatimirak did it.
That could very well be.
Explain, if you will, then. Nashamonte gestured to Arisim.
Tell him!
The metamorph said, Majesty, I remarked to you when I first saw Vatimirak that I thought I knew that man from somewhere. Indeed I do, though it took me a little while more to place him. He is a kinsman of the rebel Farata. In the days when I was with Farata in Puravane, this Vatimirak was often by our side. That was unexpected. But Valentine kept his reaction to himself.
Calmly he said, Does that matter?
What of our amnesty, Arisim?
All rebels who agreed to keep the peace after the collapse of Farata's campaign have been forgiven and restored to full civil rights. I should hardly need to remind you of all people of that.
It doesn't mean they all turned into good citizens overnight, does it, Valentine?
Nashamonte demanded.
Surely it's possible that this Vatimirak, a man of Farata's own blood, still harbors powerful feelings of...
Valentine looked toward Magadon Sambisa. Did you know he was related to Farata when you hired him as foreman?
She seemed embarrassed.
No, Majesty, I certainly did not. But I was aware that he had been in the rebellion and had accepted the amnesty, And he came with the highest recommendation. We're supposed to believe that the amnesty has some meaning, doesn't it? That the rebellion's over and done with? That those who took part in it and repented deserve to be allowed?
And has he truly repented, do you think?
Nashamonte asked.
Can anyone know, really? I say he's a fraud from top to toe. That big, booming voice, that high-flown style of speaking, those expressions of profound reverence for the pontifex. Phony, every bit of it. And as for killing Hua Kaminan, just look at him. Do you think it could have been easy to cut the poor man up in pieces that way? But Vatimarak's built like a bull bidlack. In that village of thin, flimsy folk, he stands out the way a dwicka tree would in a flat meadow.
Because he has the strength for the crime doesn't yet prove that he's guilty of it, said Valentine in some annoyance. And this other business of his being related to Farata, what possible motive does that give him for slaughtering that harmless old Purivar archaeologist? No, Nashamonte, no, no, no. You and Tunagorn between you, I know, would take about 5 minutes to decree that the man should be locked away for life in the Sangamore vaults that lie deep under the castle. But we need a little evidence before we proclaim anyone a murderer. To Magadon Sambisa, he said, What about this Kivanovad now? Why weren't we told that there's a Kivanovad living in this village? He's been away since the day after the murder, Your Majesty, she said, looking at Valentine apprehensively. To be perfectly truthful, I forgot all about him. What kind of person is he? Describe him for me. A shrug. Old, dirty, a miserable superstition monger, like all these tribal shamans. What can I say? I dislike having him around. But it's the price we pay for permission to dig here, I suppose. Has he caused any trouble for you? A little. Constantly sniffing into things, worrying that we'll commit some sort of sacrilege. Sacrilege! In a city that the Purivars themselves destroyed and put a curse on. What possible harm could we do here after what they've already inflicted on it? This was their capital, said Valentine. They were free to do with it as they pleased. That doesn't mean they're glad to have us come in here and root around in its ruins. But has he actually tried to halt any part of your work, this Kivanovad? He objects to our unsealing the Shrine of the Downfall. Ah, you did say there was some political problem about that. He's filed a formal protest, has he? The understanding by which Valentine had negotiated the right to send archaeologists into Velalisier included a veto power for the Purivars over any aspect of the work that was not to their liking. So far, he simply told us he doesn't want us to open the shrine, said Magadon Sambisa. He and I and Dr. Hua Kaminan were supposed to have a meeting about it last week and try to work out a compromise. Although what kind of middle ground there can be between opening the shrine and not opening it is hard for me to imagine. In any event, the meeting never happened, for obvious tragic reasons. Now that you're here, perhaps you'll adjudicate the dispute for us when Torki Numenad gets back from wherever he's gone off to.
Torki Numenad? Valentine said.
Is that the Kivanovad's name?
Torki Numenad. Yes.
These jaw-breaking shapeshifter names,
Nashamonte said grumpily.
Torki Numenad, Vatimarak, Hua Kaminan.
He glowered at Arisim.
By the divine, fellow, was it absolutely necessary for you people to give yourself names that are so utterly impossible to pronounce when you could just as easily have...
The system is very logical, Arisim replied serenely. The doubling of the vowels in the first part of a name implies... Save this discussion for some other time, if you will, said Valentine, making a chopping gesture with his hand. To Magadon Sambisa he said, Just out of curiosity, what was the Kivanovad's relationship with Dr. Hua Kaminan like? Difficult? Tense? Did he think it was sacrilegious to pull the weeds off these ruins and set some of the buildings upright again? Not at all, Magadon Sambisa said. They worked hand in glove. They had the highest respect for each other. Though the divine only knows why Dr. Hua Kaminan tolerated that filthy old savage for half a minute. Why? Are you suggesting that Torki Numenad could have been the murderer?
Is that so unlikely? You haven't had a single good thing to say about him yourself. He's an irritating nuisance, and in the matter of the shrine, at least, he's certainly made himself a serious obstacle to our work. But a murderer? Even I wouldn't go that far, Your Majesty. Anyone could see that he and Hua Kaminan had great affection for each other.
We should question him all the same, said Nashamonte.
Indeed, said Valentine. Tomorrow I want messengers sent out through the archaeological zone in search of him. He's somewhere around the ruins, right? Let's find him and bring him in. If that interrupts his spiritual retreat, so be it. Tell him that the Pontifex commands his presence.
I'll see to it, said Magadon Sambisa.
Oh, the Pontifex is very tired now, said Valentine.
The Pontifex is going to go to sleep. Alone in his grand royal tent at last, after the interminable exertions of the busy day, he found himself missing Carabella with surprising intensity. That small and sinewy woman who had shared his destiny almost from the beginning of the strange time when he had found himself at Pidruid, at the other continent's edge, bereft of all memory, all knowledge of self. It was she, loving him only for himself, all unknowing that he was in fact a coronal in baffled exile from his true identity, who had helped him join the juggling troupe of Zalzan Caval, and gradually their lives had merged. And when he had commenced his astounding return to the heights of power, she had followed him to the summit of the world. He wished she were with him now, to sit beside him, to talk with him as they always talked before bedtime, to go over with him the twisting ramifications of all that had been set before him this day, to help him make sense out of the tangled mysteries this dead city posed for him, and simply to be with him. But Carabella had not followed him here to Velalisir. It was a foolish waste of time, she had argued, for him to go in person to investigate this murder. Send Tunagorn, send Mirigant, send Sleet, send any one of a number of high pontifical officials. But why go yourself?
Because I must, Valentine had replied. Because I've made myself responsible for integrating the metamorphs into the life of this world. The excavations at Velalisir are an essential part of that enterprise. And the murder of the old archaeologist leads me to think the conspirators are trying to interfere with those excavations.
This is very far-fetched, said Carabella then. And if it is, so be it. But you know how I long for a chance to free myself of the labyrinth, if only for a week or two. So I will go to Velalisir.
And I will not. I loathe that place, Valentine. It's a horrid place of death and destruction. I've seen it twice, and its charm isn't growing on me. If you go, you'll go without me.
I mean to go, Carabella.
Go then, if you must. And she kissed him on the tip of the nose, for they were not in the custom of quarreling, or even of disagreeing greatly. But when he went, it was indeed without her. She was in their royal chambers in the labyrinth tonight, and he was here, in his grand but solitary tent, in this parched and broken city of ancient ghosts. They came to him that night in his dreams, those ghosts. They came to him with such intensity that he thought he was having ascending, a lucid and purposeful direct communication in the form of a dream. But this was like no sending he had ever had. Hardly had he closed his